Hello everyone, and welcome to Biopedia. We've talked before about the impacts of climate change. For example, we introduced the idea of organisms changing their distribution due to temperature changes in episode 5. However, we've not discussed the legislative frameworks around the topic before. In this episode, I'm going to introduce the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, or for short, the UNFCCC. Before we do that, though, let's quickly talk definitions. The term climate change as a general concept is one you're probably familiar with. However, its formal definition centres around an alteration in properties of the planet's climate, such as rainfall and temperature. These alterations always tend a certain way, so for example always getting hotter, and they are kept up for a minimum of 30 years. This definition stands in contrast to the definition of climate itself, which is defined as what the weather is like in a certain area across a prolonged timescale. We should also talk at this point about the greenhouse effect. This is the planet warming up because atmospheric gases take up and re-emit energy that the planet has radiated up to it. With that, on to the topic of the episode. The UNFCCC was agreed upon internationally in May of 1992 at a meeting in New York. The convention's goal, as per the original agreement document, is to obtain stability with regard to greenhouse gases being emitted. This stability should happen at a level that won't cause problems for the climate as a whole. The idea of the agreement, as noted in Article 2, is to keep the planet's temperature increase to far under 2 degrees Celsius and working to keep it below 1.5 degrees. I should note that a report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, mentions that it is technically feasible to keep the world below 1.5 degrees of warming, but it would need vast changes to everything in the human world. For some context about what all this means from an ecological point of view, a degree and a half of warming relative to pre-industrial times would mean, for example, sea levels rising less and less of an impact on biodiversity than a 2-degree rise would. By contrast, to get some real-world figures in, a 2021 report by the Climate Action Tracker predicts that we are on track for 2.4 degrees of warming with current pledges. As a quick aside, I keep mentioning warming, but relative to what exactly? Well, the standard for warming in this case is what it was like before industry came along. Pre-industrial is defined by the IPCC as the period of hundreds of years before wide-scale industry activity occurred, beginning around the year 1750 CE. The Industrial Revolution is popularly thought of as taking place between 1760 and 1840, as stemming from an economist from 19th century England named Arnold Toynbee. The average period used to reference temperature change is a century between 1850 and 1950. In July of 2022, the UNFCCC had 198 members. This includes everyone who is a part of the United Nations, and some non-UN members like the Holy See, the European Union, Palestine, etc. One of the terms of the agreement is that a conference of the parties was set up as part of the convention's organisation and structure. This conference of the parties, or COP for short, assesses how the convention is being carried out and looks over how the parties are meeting and what they need to do for the convention, etc. The UNFCCC website lists all the conferences of the parties that have occurred, and these take place approximately annually. These conferences include the recent COP26 in Glasgow in 2021, and COP27 in 2022 in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. There's one part of the preamble to the convention text from 1992 which is worth focusing on for a bit longer, because a later paper comes back to it. This is the idea that the parties involved are worried about problematic and risky anthropogenic meddling with the climate. Among other points, this is the background for the need to the UNFCCC in the first place. However, there is a 2002 study which pointed out that this concept isn't really defined by the convention text, and they note that other authors have said similar things. This study used thermohaline circulation, or THC, and impacts on coral reefs to set the limit for carbon dioxide concentrations to 450 parts per million. The idea here is that 450 ppm would stop the West Antarctic ice sheet from crumbling and stop the THC from closing down. We'll have to get back to the THC in a future episode, as it's too big a concept to cover here in a quick sidebar. For now, just note that even this goal of 450 ppm would not stop reefs from being very badly damaged. We're getting quite close to this limit already. As of May 2023, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was already 424 parts per million. For an idea of the impacts we're already seeing, a 2017 paper shows that we've already seen worsening bleaching on the Great Barrier Reef. So, how effective is the UNFCCC? To answer that question, we should turn to a 2021 report written by individuals who used to work with the organisation. It concludes that there have been some positives springing from the convention, which include the international treaties coming from it. For example, there's the Paris Agreement in 2015, which set concrete upper limits of temperature change on 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius. This builds on the previous Kyoto Protocol's emission limits only for developed countries. Incidentally, as I find myself saying very often, Paris and Kyoto are probably stories for another time. To summarise quickly here, they are agreements stemming from the COPs organised by the UNFCCC. The Paris Agreement and the implementation of the UNFCCC itself occurred on a timescale of around 1 to 2 years, which is noted as being comparatively rapid. By comparison, the Kyoto Protocol took more than half a decade because the devil was in the details when it came to the negotiations. However, the authors conclude that we can't keep going at the speed we have been for the previous 30 years when considering the next 3 decades. The conclusion is that we need to be within reach of net zero emissions by 2050, which is the end of the next 30-year cycle. Finally, the authors note that the greatest issue is to do with policies being implemented at a national level, which needs to change for the better. With that, we've dipped our toes into international climate law. Thank you very much for listening. I hope this topic was explained at least somewhat clearly enough, because international law is a bit of a murky area for me, but if not, feel free to let me know and I'll come back to it in a future episode, as I probably will do with some of these tangents I've covered. If you have any questions, comments, or topic suggestions for future episodes, including a return to agreements like this, feel free to get in touch at the show's email address. Until next time, have a great week, everyone.